On this Martin Luther King Day, we focus on something King would never compromise on, the right to vote. It was guaranteed in the Constitution that it should be restricted in any way was something he could never abide. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 made it very difficult to regulate voting on the local level. States and localities had to prove to the federal government that local regulations did not have the effect of disenfranchising large groups of minorities. In 2013, though, the Supreme Court softened that burden of proof and opened the door to new regulations that are expected to have an impact in the 2016 election all over the U.S. Add to this the fact that throughout the country, millions of people who encounter the criminal justice system often end up losing their right to vote and other rights to participate in their communities. Glenn Martin is a criminal justice reform advocate who spent 6 years in prison in New York State. Today, he has the right to vote, but only here in the state of New York. And Myrna Perez is the deputy director of the Brennan Center's Democracy Program. They both agree progress has been made, but there's still work to be done.
Our country has made enormous strides in terms of making the ballot box more accessible. But in recent years, we've seen that right being contested. We've seen some of the greatest pushback against voting rights since Martin Luther King's era. And as a country, as Americans, we need to ask ourselves, how many barriers are we going to put in front of the ballot box? Why are we doing this? And whether or not it is what we want our legacy as Americans to be. And on this day, I think Martin Luther King would tell us a couple of things. I think he would tell all people of faith that if we really want to have the kingdom on earth that the Bible suggests that we should have and that we should be striving for, we need to not be making distinctions among people based on race, based on criminal conviction, based on sex, and that if we are really going to truly be free, we need to have a fair and equal voice.
Why is it the case, Glenn, that if you commit a felony, you should not forfeit your right to vote, as is seemingly an unquestioned principle in so many states around the United States?
Sure. I believe that, you know, your citizenship is very closely tied to your ability to be able to vote. And unfortunately, in this country, we have decided that involvement with the criminal justice system in many states means that you will not have that right, sometimes forever. And unfortunately, what we're sending is a very strong message to people who've been involved in the criminal justice system, people who are disenfranchised, that they are no longer part of society. And I can't think of a worse message to send to people who already feel alienated and who are trying to fit in than you're not one of us. Talk about creating an environment where people are not disincentivized to stay away from the criminal justice system. And unfortunately, the message we're sending them is quite the opposite. And when I think of Dr. Martin Luther King and all the work that he did along with his allies, I would argue that our criminal justice system is now a surrogate for race-based discrimination, and the many wins that were achieved, what I refer to as the four E's, equality, education, enfranchisement, and employment, have been significantly diminished since those successes by our criminal justice system.
When did you learn that you wouldn't be able to vote based on your conviction?
Sure. Unfortunately, when a person is sentenced in the courtroom, they're not told about what's called the collateral consequences of criminal convictions or the punishments that are imposed by systems outside of the criminal justice system. So I learned upon exiting prison. So people who end up in the criminal justice system usually have this desire to, one, give back, and two, to be part of society, because having such a system impose itself upon you gives you a lot of reason to be civically engaged. And so I came out and tried to register to vote, actually when you have the right to vote in New York State, which is the day you get off parole. And unfortunately, the local board of election got it wrong and told me that I needed what's called a certificate of relief from disability, which is a discretionary certificate given out in New York State to some people who have criminal records, and also a letter from my parole officer. And if you know anything about parole, you can barely get a letter from your parole officer when you're on parole, much less when you're done with parole.
So where does this come from, this idea of casting felons with the idea that they wouldn't be able to vote? Is that something that comes from the minds of the framers? Is that something that was added on as a kind of punitive addition?
I think when you step back just a bit, during the Jim Crow era, when we saw constitutionally the reenfranchisement or the enfranchisement of African-American males, we also saw that an attendant barriers being put up legally that were designed to get around those kinds of issues. So, for example, poll taxes, grandfather clauses. We also saw the rise of felony disenfranchisement laws. And today, we as a country have a patchwork. There are some states, for example, Maine and Vermont, where you never lose your right to vote, even while you're in prison. There are some states like Florida, Kentucky, Iowa, where it doesn't matter what you did, how long ago it was, how young you were when you did it, if you have a felony conviction, you do not get your right to vote back unless the government specifically pardons you. And I think a number of Americans would be shocked to hear that there are about 4.5 million Americans living and working in our communities that cannot vote because of a criminal conviction in their past.
Is the net effect of this a Jim Crow re-disenfranchisement of African Americans because of the rate of incarceration of African Americans in the United States?
There's a lot of pathologies associated with a policy like this. I mean, certainly one is that there are scores of African Americans, especially African American men, who cannot participate. One of the things that I think is very attendant to the act of voting is all these pro-social behaviors. When you learn to vote, you learn that you have to wait in line. It's the way we resolve political differences. You don't always get what you want. It requires an ascension and agreement to a certain set of rules. And that is the kind of behavior that we want our returning citizens to be able to engage in.
Glenn, you mentioned a moment ago that as you were looking at getting out of prison and returning to your community, that you wanted to give back, that you actually felt like, all right, I'm rehabilitated in some sense. I definitely this time want to give back, be involved. You were really thinking about participatory mechanisms for getting yourself involved in the community, and all you saw were slammed doors.
Before I respond to that, let me also respond to the question that you just asked. I think Martin Luther King would remind us that we're all in this together. And when you think about a criminal justice system with 2.3 million people in prison and over 5 million under supervision on any given day, the truth is that the majority of those folks are white and many of them poor whites. And so these policies also impact poor white Americans disproportionately. The question about me coming out and wanting to be civically engaged, again, you know, when you have a system that you end up in, whether it's by your deliberate decision making or you end up there innocent, and many people do, the first thing I noticed was the hypocrisy built into the system. We have a criminal justice system, unfortunately, where rehabilitation is no longer a factor the way it was just 30, 35 years ago. And that was my biggest motivator. I saw so many young men, mostly young men of color, very intelligent, being swallowed up and consumed by this system and having their hopes and dreams extinguished by being part of this system. And so when I came out, part of what I thought I could do is to help change many of the policies that keep these folks on this sort of cyclical path through our criminal justice system, essentially doing life on the installment plan.
Glenn Martin, national leader and criminal justice reform advocate, spent 6 years in a New York State prison, also the president and founder of Just Leadership USA. And Myrna Perez is a deputy director of the Brennan Center's Democracy Program. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.